The Oklahoma Sooners are gaining momentum on the recruiting trail. Who could be next? We'll talk about it on today's episode of Locked On Sooners.
You are Locked On Sooners, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma Sooners. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up, Sooner Nation? Welcome to today's episode of Locked On Sooners. Thank you for joining us. Today's episode is brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook, official sportsbook of Locked On. Make every moment more. Visit FanDuel.com/LockedOn today to get started. Thank you for joining us. My name is John Williams. You can follow me on Twitter at John9Williams. My buddy here is Josh Helmer. You can follow him on Twitter at JoshOnRef. And Josh, let's talk momentum, because what we saw last summer with the Oklahoma Sooners was, once that first commitment hit, it seemed like the dominoes started to fall. And in June, July, August, Oklahoma was really racking up quite the recruiting class. And it still may be a bit early here in March, but based on crystal balls, recruiting predictions, things of that nature, the Kevin Sperry commitment for the 2025 class, it does feel like the Sooners are starting to really push a little bit closer to getting that first 2024 commit.
Let's hope so, right? It'd be nice for OU to, before you even really start embarking on spring football, I know it's oh so close here, but just with some of the recent crystal balls that we've seen for Oklahoma, we're talking about a couple of recent crystal balls from both Brandon Drum and Parker Thune on running back Caden Durham. You know, maybe you can get a commitment before spring starts here. April 8th is that Michael Hawkins commitment date that has, you know, gotten pushed back, obviously, to April 8th. So do you maybe pick up a 2024 commitment from Durham and then another one from Michael Hawkins right behind that? I know Bryant Wesco, the wide receiver's got visits elsewhere coming up. I believe Clemson is maybe next up on Bryant Wesco's visit list, and it's expected he's going to get an offer there. But so I wouldn't necessarily, even though there's crystal balls in, put Wesco in that imminent commitment type category for Oklahoma, like maybe a Durham or a Hawkins. But it would be great, wouldn't it, on the heels of Sperry committing to Oklahoma, if you have at least one in the boat before spring football, before we play the spring game and really the spring season gets totally off and running.
Yeah, I think so. And over at FanSided, one of their writers, Chris Peterson, put out an article, you know, three football teams that were gaining momentum right now. And Oklahoma is one of those. And it's for the same reasons that Josh just mentioned, you know, the Kevin Sperry commitment, the Caden Durham crystal balls. We're seeing it for Bryant Wesco as well. And not just crystal balls from OU insiders and 247 sports guys, but Mike Roach, Texas insider, you know, covering recruiting for 247 sports, covering Texas recruiting. He predicted Durham, he predicted Bryant Wesco as well, and Michael Hawkins as well. So a lot of things trending in the Oklahoma Sooners' favor. Now, yes, they're just crystal balls. They're just predictions. They don't necessarily mean a commitment is imminent or forthcoming, but it definitely shows that these players are currently favored to go to Oklahoma, and Oklahoma is making enough headway in those recruitments to be the favorite at this point. And it's interesting because, especially at running back, and I don't know how much time we've spent on this, but you're looking at Tavani Mazzell, who decommitted from Georgia and the prediction flipped to Oklahoma. You're talking about Xavier Robinson, the Oklahoma prep star, offensive player of the year in class 5A for 2022 season. Just went to Oklahoma, went to Norman, visited there, got an offer, and the predictions are coming for the Sooners. And then you've got Caden Durham, another running back who Oklahoma is favored to land. So you're looking at potentially three running backs in this class, and that doesn't even mention the several more guys like a Jeremy Payne that they were heavily in on or were favored to land months ago. But it does seem like DeMarco Murray, Brent Venables, and the Sooners have kind of landed on and centered in on these three running backs, Mazzell, Durham, and Robinson, all three very different type backs, which is kind of intriguing for what DeMarco Murray is building in that running back room. But with Wesco, with Michael Hawkins, it just all kind of seems to be coming together right now. And yeah, Oklahoma's gaining momentum. You know, just because they don't have a commitment doesn't mean we're not like we're sitting here worried that this recruiting class is not going to be good. It's going to be really, really good when it all is said and done. It's just a matter of like, I think the anticipation is building. Like, okay, we got our 2025 commitment. Now it's time to see, okay, when's that 2024 commitment going to land? And I think everybody just kind of waited with, or is sitting here waiting on the edge of our seats with bated breath, just eagerly anticipating the ice breaking on that 2024 class.
I'd love to see a defensive commitment or two before we totally get out of the spring. I know that based on the way last summer played out, John, if Oklahoma's got 5 to 6 commitments, let's say, by the time spring football wraps up, I feel pretty good if, you know, that's 5, 6 blue chip type guys that Oklahoma, again, John, is tracking for top 10, potentially top 5 type class. Because guess what? The track record shows us that this staff closes, baby. This staff, when it comes down the home stretch, they're getting blue chippers and they are inking on the dotted line. But it would be nice, again, if you had a couple of those guys be defensive members before you get totally out of the spring. And one thing that did catch me the other day from our latest conversation with John Garcia Jr. is when it comes to the two big names on the board defensive line in this 2024 class for Oklahoma, Williams Winery, David Stone. I'm not saying, and I would venture it probably takes until the summer for Williams Winery, but I'm looking up and I do see a couple of recent crystal ball predictions for Williams Winery to Oklahoma from both Parker Thune and Brandon Drum on the 5th of March and the 10th of March, respectively, from Parker and Brandon for Williams Winery. Is there any chance that you could get a commitment before the spring is over? That would be gigantic from Williams Winery, or even just before you get into next football season. If that commitment is on board before you get done with the summer, I think would be a great, great sign for Oklahoma when you talk momentum. If you can lock up that type of commitment before we boot off next fall, even better, obviously, if it's sooner than that, John, would be terrific. And for me, that's probably what I'm following over the next couple of weeks and months is, can Oklahoma, can they get some of this big name defensive talent on board before we get out of the spring, before we're done with the summer? Because as you've heard me say a number of times here, John, I'm not super concerned about Oklahoma's ability to land Caden Durham. I'm not worried about Oklahoma's ability to get Xavier Robinson on board. I'm not worried about Oklahoma's ability to bring Bryant Wesco to Norman, Oklahoma. I would love to see that Williams Winery commitment before we get done with the summer.
And I think there's a chance you could see both him and David Stone committed at some point between now and the next few months. Gerald McCoy, who was lobbying for David Stone to come to Oklahoma, David Stone quote tweeted his tweet and just said soon. So like, does that mean soon he's going to visit Norman or soon he's going to make a commitment to Oklahoma? You know, these guys, they've got offers everywhere and they've got a lot of places to see and things to figure out, but it could very well come down to, you know, these two coming on board over the next 6 months. I don't think anything's really changed on the Williams Winery front or the David Stone front. And there's several more guys, you know, Nigel Smith, another, you know, 4-star blue chip defensive lineman that Oklahoma is heavily favored to land. He's kind of like the forgotten guy right now because I think he's been favored to Oklahoma for so long that it's almost like, yeah, of course, Nigel Smith's coming to Oklahoma. And so there's just a lot of guys right now that, I mean, once the ball does get rolling, once somebody jumps on board, and if it's Williams Winery, if he's the first guy in the boat, just imagine the kind of effect that's going to have and the ripples that that's going to have on the rest of the 2024 cycle, especially the guys that are already kind of considering Oklahoma. They get that commitment done, and then it's going to be snowball effect. It's just going to be downhill from there.
Well, and with Nigel Smith, you're basically talking about since Thanksgiving, he's been projected with crystal balls to Oklahoma from Parker Thune and Brandon Drum. So you're right that maybe it's not as front of mind because it's all the way back at Thanksgiving, but that would be huge. Would be huge if there's any movement there from the Melissa High School product again before the spring is up or before we close this summer. I think would just be gigantic, John.
It absolutely would be. And speaking of gigantic, the Oklahoma Sooners got a huge win on Tuesday night against Florida State in a top five, top six showdown midweek. So that was a huge one. We're going to talk about Jordy Ball's just dominant performance here in a second. But speaking of dominance, you could get in on the dominance over at FanDuel, Josh.
If you were taking odds on the likelihood that Jordy Ball comes back and resembles the national pitcher of the year type of presence at some point throughout this 2023 Oklahoma softball season, congratulations, because obviously there was a great chance that was going to happen. We'll talk about it more in just a moment. The midway point of the NBA NHL seasons, they have come and gone. Now the perfect time is here to download the FanDuel Sports back that the FanDuel Sports app. It's America's number one sports book. New customers, no sweat, first bet up to $1,000. What does that mean? Well, that's bonus bets back if your first bet does not win. So just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. It's safe, it's secure, it's super easy to use. FanDuel even lets you combine your bets for a chance at a bigger payout with a same game parlay. What does that mean? That means you can bet on everything from the money line to point scores to threes drained. All of that, don't miss your chance to get your no-sweat first bet up to $1,000 in bonus bets when you go to FanDuel.com/LockedOn, FanDuel.com/LockedOn to learn more. Make every moment more with FanDuel, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Man, I thought and probably hopefully tease this accurately here for the audience. I thought to me, John, in the midst of everything that was for Oklahoma softball in their win over Florida State, again, this would fit into that category along with the UCLA win as, John, they might have just beaten somebody that they face in the Women's College World Championship Series. That is totally feasible that Florida State is that type of team that you see down the line for a national championship with those types of stakes on the line. So just, you know, surface level, that's gigantic for Oklahoma to pick up another one of those types of wins. We could talk about Oklahoma, the traits that I continue to marvel at with this program that it seems like, and this was what was so shocking about the Baylor loss, every time Oklahoma falls behind, you expect those bats to just bail them out of it to, okay, you give up a three-run bomb. Yeah, but those Sooner bats at some point are going to go win this game for you and respond, and probably they're going to respond immediately. And, John, that's what happened versus Florida State, but that wasn't the biggest takeaway for me. Again, hopefully it was accurately teased here on the program for you. It was Jordy Ball's performance out of the bullpen that really struck me in this contest for Oklahoma. We've been waiting. We've been wanting that type of performance. And John, she came out and was the dominant Jordy that folks have been waiting on.
Yeah, she was absolutely phenomenal. You know, she came into the game, allowed a leadoff hit, and you're like, oh man, does Jordy have it tonight? Well, she immediately responded and retired everybody. Like she went 9 straight and struck out 6 to finish out the game. You know, in a performance or in a win that, you know, Alex Tarocco had been Oklahoma's ace. Like, she had been Oklahoma's best pitcher. You know, Nicole May has been great as well, but Alex Tarocco was getting the tough starts. You know, got the start against UCLA, got this start against Florida State, and hadn't allowed a run in 30.2 innings, like 30 and two-thirds of an inning. More than a month ago was the last time she'd allowed a run. That's how dominant Alex Tarocco had been. And then, you know, she got hit up a little bit. She got beat up a little bit by Florida State. Again, a good Florida State team. And so to have Jordy Ball come in and pitch as well as she pitched against a really good team, against a really good lineup, when you just saw arguably your best pitcher kind of get beat up for 4 runs, I mean, absolutely huge. And something that could really be the thing that drives her the rest of the season, gives her the confidence that she needs to build on and rediscover that form that we saw last year, because last year she just kind of took the softball world by storm. You know, yeah, there was the mannerisms in the circle, but it was her performance. Like, she pitched really, really well. And she just hadn't, I don't know, she'd been giving up, you know, walks. She hadn't really had good control or great control like we saw a year ago. Just not everything was working quite right for her. But, man, on Tuesday night, everything clicked and was just absolutely phenomenal. Just great from the circle. And Oklahoma needed her to be, because, you know, you get down, they got the run back, or they got the lead back, and then Jordy Ball steps in with a lead and holds on to it. There was no threat. I mean, she allowed the single to lead off, but then it was it. Florida State didn't threaten Oklahoma to score again. And that's the kind of performance that they needed. I'm sure that's the performance that Patty Gasso had been like looking for. And to put her in that spot when you have Nicole May, who hasn't allowed a run all year long, I think it served two purposes. It was one, I'm going to challenge my pitcher, who I believe is great. I'm going to put her in this spot for better or for worse, even though she's been kind of up and down. I know she's got greatness in her. And Jordy Ball responded. So big kudos to her, because, I mean, again, it's been just kind of up and down. Even though she had the perfect game against Southeastern Louisiana, it just wasn't the Jordy Ball that we'd seen last year. Which, again, very high standard that she set for herself that we're all kind of hoping that she repeats and replicates. You know, sometimes progression isn't always linear. Sometimes you have a bit of a sophomore slump. Teams are able to see you. They've got film on you. They know what to expect a little bit more. And so she's kind of having to evolve her game on the fly as one of the best pitchers in college softball. And she showed why on Tuesday night. And so absolutely huge performance.
Other takeaways, I thought it was good to see Haley Lee hit another home run, fifth jack of the season. That right now, good for the Sooner team lead. I wouldn't have expected that at this juncture of the season, five would be enough right now to be tied for the lead in Oklahoma home runs. But in a roundabout way, I think that's kind of a good thing for OU, John, that OU's been this successful. And really, I don't even know that they've totally hit their stride with the long ball just yet. T.R.A. Jennings, the back-to-back, she and Haley Lee went. That was just the fourth. Just the fourth home run of, I know that maybe is a little wild to say, but for T.R.A. Jennings, just the fourth right now is a little bit slower pace for her than any of us would have expected. 60th of her career, but as this season goes along, John, and we hear this with Diamond Sports, that once things heats up, maybe it's easier to get that ball to fly a little bit. I think that probably applies maybe a little bit more in baseball than necessarily it applies in softball. But, you know, those bats heat up as the weather heats up a little bit. Hitters a little bit more comfortable, not as windy or chilly of a day at times. Maybe that works to Oklahoma's advantage to at least get the long ball cooking just a little bit more. But I just, again, continue to marvel at Oklahoma's ability to win these types of games versus these types of opponents and do so when there's a little bit of adversity in the way every once in a while for Oklahoma. So, you know, incredible win. I think for me, the final takeaway would be, John, barring, you know, a disappointing Big 12 season, which we've not seen from Oklahoma. I mean, how many Big 12 championships have the Sooners won in a row? Barring a pretty disappointing run in Big 12 play, I think the team's locked up a super regional hosting bid already.
Yeah, it's pretty likely. Now, they're going to get tested. You know, Oklahoma State's playing really good softball right now, Texas as well, and they got the loss to Baylor, you know, that's kind of hanging over their heads, although I don't think that repeats itself when they do get into Big 12 play. But, I mean, there are really good programs in the conference that are going to challenge them. But I think it was really good to get this challenge against Florida State, kind of not quite on the eve of Big 12 play, but with Big 12 play right around the corner. And they're going to get another test, you know, this weekend. They'll face Auburn, a pretty solid Auburn team out of the SEC, and Northwestern is coming to town as well. So some really good softball teams, they're going to come, and Oklahoma's going to have to stay on their A game. Everybody is going to give Oklahoma their best. That's been the case for years now. It's going to continue to be the case, but I'm with you. There's not really much that I've seen that would lead me to believe they're still not the front runner. They're still not the favorite, just because of how deep they are in the lineup, how deep they are in the circle. And I do think the weather matters. I really do think that matters, because, I mean, if you were a California kid like I was, who'd played baseball his whole life, and then your first day at tryouts for your Texas high school baseball team in North Texas, and the wind chill is minus 15, and you're out there swinging a bat, it very much matters. Now, there's a big difference between minus 15 and 40 degrees, but still, there's a big difference between 40 degrees and 70 degrees, 80 degrees. Everything loosens up, you know, the metals kind of softens up a little bit. The ball doesn't feel as hard. Like everything just kind of flies a little bit easier. So I do think the weather matters. You know, the air gets a little bit thinner, you know, not as much condensation in the air. So perhaps things start heating up. But the thing that I've really noticed is that they are still hitting a ton of doubles. Like they're on a greater doubles pace this year than they are a home run pace. And their doubles pace kind of matches their home run pace from a year ago. So they're still hitting a ton of extra base hits, getting on base a lot. It's just a matter of like, nobody's kind of taking on that big mashing role just yet. You've got Haley Lee with 5, Jada Coleman with 5, Jocelyn Erickson with 5. And then, you know, you mentioned Tiara Jennings with 4, Alyssa Brito, she's got 5. Sophia Nugent's got 4. Kinsey Hansen's got 4. So you got a bunch of players that have hit quite a few home runs. It's, you know, as opposed to you got Jocelyn Allo on pace for 35, you might have 6 or 7 that hit 15 plus this year. And, you know, a couple that hit 20 or more. And I keep coming back to this, Josh, Sydney Sanders, one of the finalists for the National Freshman of the Year award last year, hit 24 home runs. She's not even gotten going yet. She's going to. She's going to start hitting. You don't hit over 400 for a season and then fall back to hitting 200. She's going to start hitting, and it's going to come. And when that happens, it's just all going to come together for the Oklahoma Sooners.
Well, it's another March Madness without the Oklahoma Sooners involved. Is there a fix coming next season? Let's just, as the first day and second day of March Madness are taking place, let's have a little discussion. And there's some news there too for Oklahoma, another player that has made the decision to continue elsewhere.
Yeah. And we also got the women's basketball team that will be taking place in March Madness. So we'll have that as well. But first, let me talk to you about Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar ever. 100% covered in chocolate. It tastes great and it's great for you. Low calorie, low carbohydrate, low sugar, high in protein. It makes for a great snack, a great sweet treat. If you need it for breakfast or a meal replacement, Built Bar's got you covered. They got great flavors from the peanut butter brownie to the coconut almond, coconut brownie chunk, cookie dough, marshmallow flavors, great textures. Love Built Bar. It's fantastic. It tastes great and it's great for you. So go to built.com, use promo code LOCKED15, get 15% off your next order over at built.com, or you can find them in Walmart or Sam's Club as well. That's built.com, promo code LOCKED15. And Josh, yeah, the men's basketball team not taking place in March Madness for the second straight year. Both years under Porter Mosier have missed the NCAA tournament, and it doesn't look like a team that's close either. You know, we kind of hate that word, we're close, but this is kind of the opposite of we're close, that they're not very close. And they've got a lot of work to do. And namely, it's probably going to be in the transfer portal, as you're starting to see, or you have your first entrance into the transfer portal in CJ Nolan. And it's anticipated that quite a few names are going to be entering the portal over the next 60 days.
So CJ Nolan, and actually Benny Schroeder as well, having entered the portal, and we'll see what the complete fallout is here. I think, as we've discussed, I would expect a massive change in complexion of what the roster looks like for Oklahoma by the time we tip next season off. I've been campaigning. I think to me, you either rip the Band-Aid off and go a different direction entirely away from Porter Moser, or this has to be 2 more years regardless, unless next year is so nightmarishly bad, John, to where you win 10 games, 11 games, and it's clear that you've gotten even worse from where you've been at these past 2 years. To me, there's such a building process that still needs to take place for Oklahoma that I don't even think next year can be the final litmus test if you're doing this right for Porter Moser and for Oklahoma long-term, the chances for this thing to grow and then ultimately become successful. Having said that, I understand the reality of next year could very likely be, if you don't get into March Madness, that could be the swan song and curtains for this Porter Moser era at Oklahoma. Again, CJ Nolan, Benny Schroeder, I think we're just getting going on what the overhaul of this roster looks like. It does feel like things are still a little bit out of place for Oklahoma. Watching March Madness, where are the Sooners at? Why are they not playing in this event? It does take a little bit of the excitement away from what's been a wild first day of the NCAA tournament with Arizona going down. What was the other big upset? Virginia lost another first-round game. So it's been a great NCAA tournament. It's been exciting, but I'm missing our Sooners in it.
Man, that poor Virginia squad, bro. I don't know what to do. Like, it's like every few years they get bounced in the first round by some team. And you're like, how did that happen again? It's like they're like the Los Angeles Chargers of college basketball. They just – now, I know that they've won championships too, so you can't feel too bad for them. But, yeah, on Oklahoma's front, it's a strange place to be because, you know, if you think Porter Moser is a good coach, which a lot of college basketball seems to think so, you know, he was the hot name, you know, coming out of that, you know, Sweet 16 run they had a few years back. And I mean, that was the name that was on the top of everybody's list for Oklahoma for the most part. You know, you could find some Kelvin Sampsons out there as well, but it was Porter Moser. And so kind of like what Dabo Swinney said about, you know, Brent Venables during last season, like, well, he didn't forget how to coach football. Well, do we think that Porter Moser forgot how to coach basketball? Probably not. I mean, the thing that made him so successful at Loyola Chicago, it could work at Oklahoma. It's just a matter of getting the right pieces in place and seeing those pieces develop. You know, Oklahoma's not a traditional basketball school. Have they had success in the past? Absolutely. But they're not a Kansas or a Duke or North Carolina or a Kentucky or a Baylor or even a Texas. And I know that sucks to hear that, but you're building towards something. And if you think this is a guy that's a good basketball coach, I don't know if you want to short circuit and pull the plug just 3 years into the build, right? If it takes time to build a program, and maybe we're a little bit spoiled because Bob Stoops had one good season, or, you know, a winning season, and then he won a national title. Maybe that spoiled everything a little bit, but maybe we just wait and see how this plays out. You know, if you want to go back really far to Sherry Cole, kind of revitalizing the women's basketball program that was about to go defunct, and she brought it kind of out of the depths of darkness into the light, and, you know, made it a national power at one time. And but it took time, it took building. So I think it's worth kind of just maybe taking a step back and maybe not being so quick to move on from Porter Moser. But at the same time, he's going to require some progress. The good thing that's on Porter Moser's kind of side is the fan base isn't so rabid that there's going to be like picket signs or people, you know, a whole bunch of people, you know, calling for his ouster. But that's also part of the challenge that he faces, is getting the fan base to care enough about Oklahoma basketball for him to want to get fired, I guess. It's kind of the double-edged sword that he's facing.
So Oklahoma, via KenPom, is 286th nationally out of, let's see, 363 teams in adjusted tempo. St. John's played the fastest tempo. Alabama would have ranked fifth in that category this season. And what does that mean? That means how many possessions do you get per 40 minutes adjusted for opponent? How many possessions do you get per game? Oklahoma, in that very, very bottom percentage nationally, 286. And I think that that's historically how Porter Moser teams have played Loyola Chicago. Guess what? Went to a Final Four, went to another Sweet 16, doing just that with Krutwig and with some of those other core players. Is it time, John, to recalibrate things and recalibrate your thinking and take Oklahoma? And I know Oklahoma fans would pine for this, right? Like, give me some Billy Ball, get up and down. That's exciting. If you want butts in seats, you play like that. And that was Oklahoma basketball. But just even Oklahoma's history aside, is it time for Porter Moser this offseason to do a little self-reflection and say, you know what? this has not worked here. I need to go in the transfer portal and find some guys that want to get up and down and want to play with pace and want to enhance tempo. Is it time to rethink just the entire approach, or is that too dangerous of a gamble?
Man, it can go one of two ways, and it is a gamble. I don't like coaches kind of departing from their philosophy, you know, something that's helped them find a lot of success. At the same time, though, if you don't find the shooters, which Porter Moser needs shooters in his offense, that much is plain to see, because the motion, the ball movement that they utilize in the offense, it does create open looks. You just don't have enough guys that can knock them down. And if that's the problem, then you got to find shooters, or as you're mentioning, Josh, you got to abort the plan and you got to find something different. You got to find athletes and you got to run. It's always hard to get coaches to change, right? Coaches are very stagnant. They're very set in their ways. They don't want to depart from what they know. And we'll see. I mean, we'll see how that goes. So far, the transfer portal hasn't been what we've needed it to be, you know, like the Groves brothers coming in, they were good at times, but they weren't the guys that we saw against Kansas that were just filling it up. It just hasn't worked out. If anything, they probably had a net loss in the portal, because you see a guy like Davion Harmon go play well for Texas Tech. There's a lot to work on there. A team that doesn't have a whole lot to work on, the women's team. They're building and they're growing a program, and they are, I don't know, they have a chance to make some noise in the tournament, but it's going to be a tough road for them. They go out to Los Angeles. They're going to play Portland in the opener. On the other side of their foursome, they got UCLA versus Sacramento State. The winner of that one, Oklahoma, and presumably if Oklahoma beats Portland, they'll face the winner of UCLA, Sacramento State, basically a home game for the Bruins. And then if they're able to survive that one, they get the joy of playing South Carolina in the Sweet 16. So it's going to be a really interesting tournament for Jenny Baranchik's bunch. Huge tests. I think this Portland team is really good. I mean, they beat Gonzaga out in the West Coast Conference Tournament Championship. You know, they hung in there in some bigger, you know, games during the season. And then, you know, that Sacramento State team, that's no slouch. And then UCLA, it's a good program. It may not have the national accolades or the history that some of these, you know, other schools have, or even that Oklahoma has, but it's a solid program that's going to, and they've got some players there that could cause Oklahoma some fits. So it's a tough draw for the Sooners, but it's definitely a draw that allows for them to have some success and get to the Sweet 16 where the Gamecocks would await.
Saturday, 8:00 versus Portland for anybody that would like to be informed. And we don't know about the second round game, to be determined if Oklahoma can handle its business and beat Portland. I would imagine, yes, they will match up versus UCLA in Los Angeles. And then, like you said, take care of business there, get to the Sweet 16, and probably you're playing I was listening to L. Duncan on one of the afternoon shows with ESPN, and Kellerman was hosting it. I don't remember which one it's called, but L. Duncan's having the conversation about, or was asked the question, is this if they win at all, going to be regarded as the greatest women's college basketball team of all time in South Carolina. So, and they would join a group of teams if they go and win it all as an undefeated champion. I think they would be the 10th with that distinction as an undefeated champion. So all of that to say that those types of conversations are being floated around about this South Carolina women's basketball team. If you can go win two games, man, it would set you up for potentially, oh man, a heck of an upset if you could spring it.
Hey, and they've got the offense to play with just about anybody. It's a matter of, are they going to get enough stops defensively to win games? But that's going to do it for today's episode of Locked On Sooners. Thanks so much for tuning in and being part of the show. Subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. We're free and available on all podcast platforms and on YouTube. Check us out over there. Hit the subscribe button and that notification bell to let you know when new episodes drop. But until next time, he's Josh Helmer. I'm John Williams. We'll talk to you then. Boomer Sooner.